The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Going back to the to that cyber attack, Paul C. Dwyer, good morning. You're the CEO and Chairman of Cyber Risk International.
Good morning, Brendan.
Paul, this attack on the HSE, this is not an isolated incident. This is very much part of a big international story at the moment, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, ransomware has been in the media and there's been momentum around it over the last considerable amount of months and weeks because of the attacks on the health sector around the world, government bodies, and indeed even oil pipelines. So it's just a growing threat that's being realised on a day-to-day basis right across lots of different sectors, not just the health sector. But, you know, even if we cast our minds back, Brendan, to 2017 when the NHS dodged a bullet with WannaCry, and HSE effectively dodged a bullet then with the same kind of attack, this is something that's been around for quite some time.
How did the HSE dodge the bullet that time?
Well, effectively, a break in the chain or the cyber kill chain was discovered by a young researcher, which stopped that affecting the world. But it had, at that stage, it already affected the NHS and a number of different organisations. But the HSE at that time was caught effectively in a very vulnerable position because they were spending their weekends patching systems and trying to get things up to a level of cyber hygiene so that they might be able to deal with the attack. But thankfully, a researcher had stopped it in its midst, that ransomware attack, going across the world. And that attack was actually, the people behind that were state actors. It was the North Koreans.
Okay. Now, we don't think it is this time. We're told that this is criminal, and it seems that the way of these things is that likely to be emanating from Russia.
Look, Russia is a background of a lot of cyber criminality, and there's a certain arrangement between the Russian state and cyber criminals. They use them for what they need, you know, from the point of view of state activism and so on like that, and things they want to carry out from an espionage point of view. But the reality is you've got China, you've got Unit 61398 China, which is part of their army over there, and you've got the North Koreans. But yeah, you've alluded to it there, that organized crime gangs, because they're finding it easier to make money, less chance of getting caught, and that the rewards are massive. When people are paying out, you know, $5 million in ransoms, when you have the likes of the United States of America being held to ransom and their police departments paying ransoms to criminals and terrorists who are behind all of this, then it's a very lucrative game. And of course, criminals go where the rewards are.
Yeah, I saw that Colonial Pipeline hack that people will have been hearing about, which was last week, I think, which was a big petrol pipeline across America. They paid out $5 million. I see what the line over there appears to be from the government is that they don't encourage people to pay the ransoms, but that they don't forbid people from paying ransoms either. So clearly, for a lot of people, the easiest thing is to pay the ransom.
For a lot of people, I mean, these attacks range from ransoms of, say, $500, $1,000, all the way up into the millions. But when you look at, you know, even insurance companies are covering off ransoms to a certain extent, even from the point of view of people doing their accounts, you know, and having to write off a payment that's gone out. You'll see, for example, in the UK, Her Majesty's Revenue allowing ransom payments to be a write-off. So there's a lot of this activity where this is becoming business as usual. But, you know, these attacks, as I say, they're around a long time and businesses have to be prepared for them. You know, not scared of them, but actually just be prepared. And it is the most basic things to put in place that can prevent this kind of stuff happening.
But we're told that this is a zero-day threat or whatever, that it's not really the HSE's fault because they would have had antiviral software for possibly all the existing viruses, but that this was a new mutation or whatever. So that if you want that notion that we had of a naive population which had no immunity, that's what the health system's computer system was in this case.
Well, it you know, when people just rely on one layer of defence like antivirus will probably stop around 4-5% of cyber threats. That's the reality. And it's a false sense of security just to rely on one layer of defence. So we talk about multiple layers of defence in cyber security. So we would have things like endpoint protection, firewalls. But the most important thing is the segmentation of the network. You know, when something like ransomware hits an organization, what you do is you isolate. You isolate that machine, that network segment. You don't isolate the entire business and close it down.
So you're saying they shouldn't have shut down everything here?
They may have had no choice because they may not have the right preparations put in place to be able to segment off and isolate just one portion of their business. But, you know,
but in fairness to them, it does sound like they are now going through it segment by segment, doesn't it, and reopening as they go.
Yeah, the common practice here is that you will have your network designed in such a way that you expect things like this to happen, and you can close off a portion of your business, not the entire enterprise. That is part of the critical national infrastructure of a state.
Okay, and look, they're not here to defend themselves now, and we don't know enough about it. But to you, from the outside, this looks like a failure, that we could have been better prepared, does it?
I think we'd need more details, and I'm not certainly criticising, because it's like one business today, another business tomorrow. I'd really rather put out the message that every business needs to be prepared about this. And they're certainly, HSE are methodically going through with the National Cybersecurity Centre, and they're doing all the right things now. But there's other issues here, whether the right kind of lessons were learnt after WannaCry, the bullet that was dodged. And I'd be very interested in what comes out in a post-incident analysis of this to see what lessons can be learned, because we have to learn lessons from these incidents.
Yeah.
We have to share that kind of information, help each other.
Because I think what people probably didn't realise, we'd heard, there was always talk that, oh, they could get into the power grids and shut down the electricity in the whole country. But I think what a lot of people didn't realise on the last day or two is that every day health systems are actually being bombarded with these things chancing their arm all the time, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, the most valuable information to criminals is health-based information, because they can monetize it for different kinds of scams as well. But there's three aspects of this kind of attack. There's the piece where they want to get paid for giving you back access to your information. There's the piece where they may want to get paid to stop putting that information just out publicly. And then there's the third aspect of it, where when they find information that they might use for scams or to extort money from individuals, they'll use that aspect of it as well. These guys have no mercy, and they're just orientated to make profits.
Okay. Tell me this. Is this, the notion of a weak link problem, like, which is that, like, the one weakest link is if you've one weak link, you're in trouble. Is working from home a bonanza for these guys in terms of, like, presumably, if you have, like, tens of thousands of HSE workers across the country on home Wi-Fi networks or whatever, does that not create huge vulnerabilities? I'm wondering, is this going to change our whole attitude about the working from home thing, and companies' attitude, certainly?
Well, it should. I mean, it's a brilliant point you're making, because the fact is, we refer to that as the inherent cyber risk level of a business or enterprise has changed because of the work model has changed. And not just from the technical aspect of maybe operating in shared work environments, no access even to things like shredders to shred confidential information, but being in a shared environment on a residential home internet gateway, all of those kind of things are technical risks and have an extra layer of risk associated with them. And, you know, coming out of that is the challenge of how we need to catch our breath and accept this is the new normal. So we need to assess the risk levels we have now and address those risks, because we're going to be operating like this for quite some time to come. And businesses need to catch the breath, not just the health sector, but all businesses need to catch the breath, look at what risks they've taken on, because a lot of businesses took these things just to keep the ship afloat. You know, that they made decisions to put home workers off. We're all interconnected and interdependent. There's so many parallels with the COVID virus here, you know, and super spreader kind of events and all that. But it's basic cyber hygiene that stops this. It's the antivirus.
But what, Paul, that you're trusting every single person at home in their house on a laptop with working off a box for their Wi-Fi that's made God knows where, possibly in China, where you have to trust every single link in that chain.
Absolutely, and it's almost like a community level of trust, because we can't just put it all on the HSE. We can't put it all on a bank if our banking app is hacked. We all have a part to play. We have to make sure our phones and our devices are patched. We need to make sure, you know, we're using secure passwords. And these basic things are the equivalent of wearing masks and washing your hands. They stop the virus. They stop these things being able to propagate, and these cyber, you know, threat actors and bad actors actually, you know, achieving their goal.
Paul, there's a text here to 51551 from Philip, who said ransom is probably paid in cryptocurrency. It absolutely is. Is it not a good reason to stop using these new cryptocurrencies? Which is, there's another interesting question here, which is that Bitcoin has been completely legitimized, if you will, by the likes of Elon Musk and a lot of other people and big funds now talking about using Bitcoin and related currencies as well. But that these are subject to none of the rules that we have around, strict rules around money laundering and everything else. Like, if you went in tomorrow and put a wedge of money into the bank, a big wedge of it, you kind of have to prove where it came from. So do we need to clamp down on Bitcoin?
Well, the good news is that the Central Bank of Ireland, for example, are doing great work in this area in putting in increased control, legislation and guidance around cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, blockchain, all this kind of innovative technology that essentially criminals use as well to carry out. Criminals are entrepreneurs. They're opportunistic and they're innovative, and they're going to use every new kind of technology. Sometimes it takes a while for the legislation, guidance, so on to catch up to protect society and protect businesses. But I see the work that Central Bank of Ireland are doing. They're doing great work in this
space. So you think we are moving to a place where cryptocurrencies will have to be as transparent and transactions in them will have to be transparent?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the reality is that cryptocurrencies in different countries around the world, you can go in, you can buy your Starbucks, you can use it to pay your expenses in your company, you know, you can buy your computer online, all those kind of things. It just hasn't become pedestrian in Ireland, so to speak. But it is something that a lot of businesses increasingly are using because of its ease of use as well.
Yeah, but on the other hand, facilitating this massive criminality and extortion of states all over the world. The other question then is, of course, a lot of this is going on the dark web. Should there not be pressure put on the internet service providers to shut down the dark web, essentially, if this is what's coming out of it?
Well, they're not able to shut it down effectively.
As nobody can control the dark web, no?
No, there's lots of legitimate businesses. The BBC is on the dark web. I mean, there's lots of legitimate businesses on the dark web as well, because it enforces, you know, people to remain anonymous, keep secure for reporting processes and so on like that. You know, but there's lots of obviously nefarious activity that goes on the dark web as well. And the FBI, Interpol, Europol, and the Garda Síochána are involved in huge operations to close down many aspects of it, especially around child abuse imagery and so on. They're very successful in that space. But it's like a whack-a-mole game, Brendan. As soon as it goes one down, another one opens up.
And so listen, so where we're at now is we're saying we won't pay the ransom. It sounds that they are opening it up bit by bit, checking out if it's clean, and then they can start put that bit of the system back online. What are the options here? As in, like, if they don't pay the ransom, does the virus stay there? Can they get this malware out of the system themselves, or where does it go from here?
Okay, so, and this gets back to, I suppose, the initial point I was making without being critical of the HSC. If they have the preparations in place insofar as that they have good, solid backups of their data and so on, then they're in a stage where they're actually making sure that they are getting rid of the virus out of their systems. Their belts and braces, make sure there's nothing there, and also the inherent vulnerabilities that allowed it in are being patched up, and then they'll be recovering their data. If they find out that their backups are also infected, we're in a whole different war game here. It's a different theatre of war we're dealing with.
Okay. Jesus, terrifying. So listen to this, right? This is from Therese. I work for a small organisation. My PC, which is the holder of all the info, shut down one morning a few years ago. Blank screen and then a ransom attack. My heart almost stopped. It's such an awful feeling. Luckily for us, most of the info I needed was backed up on an external hard drive or databases were accessible online. It's scary. Can you imagine the heart attack when that happens on your computer screen? God. Okay, Paul C. Dewar, CEO and Chairman of Cyber Risk International, thank you very much for that. And no doubt we'll be talking a lot more about this over the weekend. Let's take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.